This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we are slated to hear from Roger Villery, the chairman of the Louisiana GOP. Our state has become a largely Republican state when it comes to statewide offices, and Louisiana has not voted for a Democrat in a presidential election since 1996, 16 years ago, when Bill Clinton won in a landslide over Bob Dole. What's happened in the last decade and a half? We'll talk about it with Roger Villery, 15 days away from the national election between President Obama and Governor Romney. And polls show a tightening race between the Republican nominee and the Democratic nominee. Also, Kimberly Chopin with her debut novel, Metamorphosis. All this today, but first the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it is 877-217-5757, and you may reach us via email at inkstershow@wrkf.org. We're told that our guest slated to start with us today, Roger Villery, the chair of the Louisiana GOP, is dealing with an emergency of sorts at his florist. So hopefully Roger will be able to sift through the flowers and join us in the near term. But there is much to talk about on this date, October 22nd, 2012, 15 days before the presidential election. And while we're waiting for Roger, I think it's important that we note the passing of George McGovern, the U.S. Senator who won the Democratic Party's presidential nomination in 1972 as an opponent of the war in Vietnam and a champion of liberal causes. He went down to a stunning defeat in 1972, losing 49 states to Richard Milhouse Nixon, carrying only Massachusetts and the District of Columbia, and collecting 17 electoral votes to 520 for Richard Nixon, who won re-election and then was immersed in the Watergate scandal for the full part of his second term before he resigned on August 9, 1974. George McGovern, after he was defeated, ended up getting re-elected once to the U.S. Senate, and then he was defeated in 1980 when several Democrats around the country went down in flames along with Jimmy Carter. And McGovern at that time was looking for a job, and he came to Louisiana. He was a professor for a year at the University of New Orleans, and he was a man who had many interests. He was a Ph.D. and had a Ph.D., and he, of course, served heroically in World War II, winning the Distinguished Flying Cross. And unfortunately for him and his supporters, he was branded as a wimp when he was running against Richard Nixon 40 years ago. He gave a stirring speech at the Democratic National Convention in Miami in 1972, but George McGovern had few people watching him because the convention was so mismanaged that he didn't give the speech until about 3 a.m. Eastern Time, which was 2 o'clock Central Time. I remember watching it as a 14-year-old, and it was a good speech, but unfortunately for him, not many people saw it or heard it. And then his nominee for vice president, Tom Eagleton, was revealed to have had electroshock therapy in his past, and McGovern ultimately had to let go of Eagleton after saying that he was behind him 1,000%. But before that, at the convention in Miami, in both the GOP and the Democratic convention, conventions convened in Miami in 1972, George McGovern, who was 49 years old at the time, he died at 90 yesterday in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Here's George McGovern in his prime.
From secrecy and deception in high places, come home, America. From military spending so wasteful that it weakens our nation, come home, America. From the entrenchment of special privilege and tax favoritism, from the waste of idle hands to the joy of useful labor, from the prejudice based on race and sex, from the loneliness of the aging poor and the despair of the neglected sick, come home, America. Come home to the affirmation that we have a dream. come home to the conviction that we can move our country forward. Come home to the belief that we can seek a newer world. And let us be joyful in the homecoming. For this land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
A bit of Woody Guthrie there from George McGovern, and of course this was the 100th anniversary year for the birth of Woody Guthrie, and George McGovern wasn't far behind him. He was born in 1922 and had a long and distinguished year on the long and distinguished life and career on the American political horizon, and he influenced many, including Gary Hart, who was with us a few days ago, the former senator from Colorado who was McGovern's campaign manager in 1972. And the man who ran McGovern's campaign in Texas that year was 26-year-old Bill Clinton, who was working in the Lone Star State trying to help McGovern, along with his girlfriend at the time, Hillary Rodham. In Texas, McGovern didn't fare well. In fact, he lost every county in the state of Texas. And in one of Hunter Thompson's books, he notes that Frank Mankiewicz, who managed McGovern's campaign in one area, Gary Hart being one area and Mankiewicz being the other. But Mankiewicz said on the plane heading back from Rapid City, South Dakota that night that whoever handled the campaign in Texas would never work in politics again. And the guy who handled McGovern's campaign there was Bill Clinton. Interestingly, Clinton along the way in 1972, he was campaigning in Texas for McGovern and other Democrats. And one of those who came to visit with him in mid-October was Hale Boggs, the House Minority Leader from Louisiana, the father of Cokie Roberts. And it was Bill Clinton who put Hale Boggs on the plane in Texas that went to Alaska and ultimately another plane carrying Congressman Boggs and Congressman Bekich of Alaska crashed, and their bodies have never been found. That was October 16th, 1972. And the anniversary was 40 years ago last week that Hale Boggs disappeared, and we never knew completely what happened on that plane flight. The rigors of flying in Alaska are well known, as former LSU Chancellor Sean O'Keefe can attest. He was injured severely in a crash there a couple of years ago that took the life of former Alaska Senator Ted Stevens. But Boggs was a member of the Warren Commission, as we know. And because of that, there was some speculation that there might have been some kind of conspiracy, but that has never been proved. And 40 years later, it's believed that simply the plane that he and Congressman Bekich was on a victim of the terrain or perhaps the weather that is in Alaska at this time of year. 297-5633-877-217-5757. Those are your numbers. You may reach us online at inkstershow@wrkf.org. With the election now 15 days away, there is really no mystery as to who will carry Louisiana. Mitt Romney will win this state, barring something really unusual. And he will follow in the footsteps of George Bush in 2000 and George Bush in 2004 and John McCain in 2008. The last Democrat to win in Louisiana was Bill Clinton in 1996. And this is notable because our state from 1972 to 2004 was a bellwether state, voting for the winner of 9 consecutive presidential elections, but that is the case no longer. It appears that this is solid Republican turf, and Mitt Romney and Barack Obama have proved such by basically ignoring Louisiana and several other southern states considered to be strongly in the Romney camp. Now, the latest polls show a tight race in other parts of the country, but over the weekend, the polls began moving a bit in President Obama's favor in some key places. And because of that, Nate Silver, who has this website 538, and he called the election accurately 4 years ago, He now suggests that President Obama has a 67% chance of winning re-election. And he has the electoral map at 288 for President Obama and 250 for Governor Romney. That said, heading into tonight's debate, the final and third debate between President Obama and Governor Mitt Romney, Romney is leading the president in the latest Politico poll in the general election, 49-47%. That's the good news for Governor Romney. But in Ohio, which is considered to be a state that Governor Romney has to have to win the election, the CBS News poll released today shows President Obama ahead by 5 points in Ohio, 50-45%. So it would appear there could be a split decision similar to what happened in 2000, in which, as we know, Albert Gore won the popular vote by almost 600,000 votes and lost in the Electoral College narrowly to George Bush. The Gallup poll is the one that has been the one that is mystifying, because in that one, the last one released yesterday, President Obama trails Mitt Romney 52-45%, 7 percentage points separating Romney and Obama. And in the Gallup tracking poll, if that were to be the case, if Romney were to have a lead like that nationally, it would seem that he would be an overwhelming favorite to win in the Electoral College. And Nate Silver debunks that poll, saying it's not accurate, but the people at Gallup say it is accurate because it's not tracking all voters, it's tracking likely voters. And remember, only 57% of the electorate showed up in 2008, so 43% of the voters will not be participating in this election if the turnout is similar in 2012. That's one thing we have going for us in Louisiana, is that we take pride in our elections, and last time in this state, more than 70% of the people voted, and I would think that would be the case this time around as well. And because of the high turnout last time in Louisiana, John McCain received more votes in that campaign than anyone in the history of the state in any election. And he got right at 60% of the votes against President Obama, who came in at 39.9% in 2008. No African American in Louisiana history has ever cracked 40% in a statewide election. How much does race play a factor? I think we'd have to say it plays some factor in the election. And nothing has changed on that end, so President Obama probably will be defeated rather handsomely in Louisiana by Governor Mitt Romney. What are your thoughts? 297-5633 is the number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. You may reach us also online at inkstershow@wrkf.org. 15 days away, tonight's the third debate, and most of the scorecard showed Governor Romney winning debate number one handsomely, and President Obama winning debate number two narrowly. And how much do the debates matter? In the first one, it appears the polls moved forward for Governor Romney after his performance on the stage in Danville, Kentucky, with President Obama, who has acknowledged that he did not do particularly well. And in the second debate, it appears things have stayed rather the same as far as national surveys. And as a result, tonight's debate could, 15 days out, could determine the electorate's final verdict on these candidates, and that means it could determine who wins the election on November 6th, 15 short days away. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. You may also reach us at inkstershow@wrkf.org. You're listening to WRKF in Baton Rouge, and later in the hour we will hear from Kimberly Chopin, who is a mover and shaker with the Louisiana Lottery and is involved with the Louisiana Book Festival, which has returned, and will tell us about her debut novel, Metamorphosis, a love story. But first, we'll talk some more politics, and we look forward to talking with you after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. We look forward to hearing from you. 877-217-5757 outside the area. And if you would like to reach us via email, you may do so by writing inkstershow@wrkf.org. That's E-N-G-S-T-E-R. As mentioned, 15 days away from the November 6th election. And yesterday, we lost U.S. Senator George McGovern. He was elected in 1962, defeated in 1980, so he served three terms as a U.S. Senator from the state of South Dakota. And I had the pleasure of interviewing him a few times, and he used to ride to the Capitol with his good friend Hubert Humphrey. At one point, they became bitter political rivals, but then they made up. But they would ride to the Capitol, and he said that Hubert Humphrey would often talk about his days in Louisiana and his days as a student in Baton Rouge. Hubert Humphrey got his master's in political science from the Old War School in 1940, and McGovern said that Hubert Humphrey, who, of course, was vociferous on almost any subject, was quite vociferous when it came to LSU, and because of that, McGovern said, hey, I want to see what's going on down there. And he was a good friend of Stephen Ambrose, who, of course, was prominent at the University of New Orleans, the world-renowned historian. And after losing his Senate seat, he came and he taught at UNO for a year, and he made a speech at the old LSU Union before it was refurbished. And a full house showed up to see former Senator George McGovern in 1983. 297-5633 is your number. And it's curious that many of the issues that were espoused by Senator McGovern 40 years ago are still prominent in American politics today. And this is a guy who came to Washington as a 34-year-old former college history teacher and a decorated bomber pilot. And he thought of himself as the son of the prairie. And he rose to the heights of American politics. But when it came to the election, carried just one state, and that state was Massachusetts. And people knew in 1972 that McGovern was pretty much going down, but he still had big crowds following him around in the final days of the campaign, and his big message at that time was ending the war in Vietnam. Little did we know that on June 17th of that year, an event at the Watergate complex in Washington would take life and become the issue that took down President Richard Nixon 2 years later. And a few things before we get back to the election, and we do have a few folks who have offered questions regarding November 6th, but LSU winning over the weekend, 24-19 at College Station. The Tigers now will be 7-1 when they play Alabama in 2 weeks. LSU has a week off. Alabama is unbeaten, 7-0, number one in the nation. And the Crimson Tide hosts unbeaten Mississippi State Saturday in Tuscaloosa. And surprisingly, Alabama has been installed as a whopping 24-point favorite. The Saints have won two games in a row. They're 2-4. Drew Brees threw for 377 yards yesterday, four touchdowns as the Saints beat Tampa Bay 35-28, and New Orleans has Denver and Peyton Manning next on the schedule. But the Saints have a long way to go. They're four games behind Atlanta in their division. And 10 years ago yesterday, former Governor Edwin Washington Edwards, the man who led Louisiana for 16 years, elected as governor in 1971, 1975, 1983, and 1991. He went to prison on fraud and racketeering charges, and he was convicted in federal court in Baton Rouge on the 9th of May, 2000. It took 2.5 years for all the appeals to be exhausted and for Governor Edwards to report to Texas, first in Big Spring, Texas, ultimately in Oakdale, where he served most of his 8.5 years in prison. But before he went on the 21st, which would have been 10 years ago Sunday, Jeff Palermo of the Louisiana Radio Network interviewed Edwin Edwards as he was walking out of his home in the Country Club of Louisiana. Phone rings, and Edwin Edwards, as he headed to prison, of course, at his age, 75, he had no idea if he would ever get out. But here's how he sounded a decade ago.
Under the circumstances,
Kevin, that's not the right one. I think we've got two cuts on there, so let it go through, and I think we'll have the right one with Edwin Washington Edwards, who really served his time without a lot of fanfare. He could have probably gotten out earlier if he had admitted guilt, but he would not do that. And while he was in prison, we had guests on this show, like former Governor Buddy Romer, who said that Edwin Edwards should not get out early. And David Vitter, the U.S. Senator, the junior senator, also fought mightily to keep Edwin Edwards behind bars for his entire term. But here he was on October 21st, 2002.
Yes, it's here. As it's come, it's also passed, and there will be other days. This one is not a good one, but I've had many, many good ones in my life for which I'm very thankful, and I certainly want to express again my appreciation to my family and my friends who have been so supportive through this ordeal.
What has this past weekend been like for you?
In a way, wonderful. It's brought my family and me together on many occasions. We are a great deal closer than we ever were. Tragedy has a way of doing that to people. And we've learned to appreciate life and to appreciate our freedoms. On the other hand, we had to face the reality of this Monday morning coming, and here it is.
What do you expect in federal prison?
I have no way of knowing. When I was 17 years old, I volunteered to join the Naval Air Corps during World War II. I left my home as a country lad, didn't know what to expect. I went to serve my country. Thank goodness I didn't have to fight. But I left my home not knowing what to expect, and so it is today. I can say this, whatever is handed to me, I will accept. I will abide by the rules, and I will be a good prisoner.
That was Edwin Washington Edwards on the 21st day of October 2002. He went to prison, and he served 8.5 years. And put it in perspective, the man's 85 years old, and he spent 1/10 of his life, 10%, in federal prison. But when he came out, he came out in style and has married a beautiful woman, 52 years his junior. And Edwin Edwards is quite proud of his third wife, Trina. And as he said, I was sent to prison for life, and I came out with a wife. And Edwin Edwards is a man, of course, is a great quipster. That was part of his charm and part of his success. Someone once asked him who the most successful politician in Louisiana history was, and he says, I look in the mirror every day and I see him. Edwin Washington Edwards, who, as we know, is still active and has been on this show a few times since his release in January a year ago. So it's going on 2 years since he was released from federal prison, and he has not shied from the public eye. He is a man who loves the spotlight, and the people of Louisiana probably would vote for him in strong numbers again if he were able to run for office, but his federal conviction keeps him from doing so, and it's unlikely that he will receive a presidential pardon. And at 85, you got to think that maybe he has better things to do with his life. And he is says he's writing another book. We'll see. The first one with Leo Honeycutt, written by Leo Honeycutt, but authorized by the governor, has been an overwhelming bestseller. And according to Jim Brown, the publisher, it is the most successful book ever printed in the state of Louisiana as far as sales, the authorized biography of Edwin Washington Edwards. Now, I don't know if Edwards has opined at all about the presidential election, and as he's gotten older, I think he's gotten more conservative, and he noted on this show that he married a Republican, but I would think that if he could vote, he probably would be voting for President Obama. But I did get a inquiry from Matthew downtown, who said that because there is so much talking about Louisiana not being in play and Romney having it in the bag, that this will discourage voters from taking part, and it could affect other elections, and that's a good point of view. But I think 4 years ago it was considered to be a given that that John McCain would carry Louisiana, and there still was over 70% turnout in our state. And there are many reasons to go to the polls this year, and 2 weeks from now, 2 weeks from Tuesday, independent of the presidential election. In Baton Rouge, for example, we have a mayor's election. There's a Supreme Court race on the ballot, state Supreme Court, a public service commission race. There are several amendments that are pertinent to the lives of the people of our state. So there are a lot of reasons to go independent of the presidential election, but that's what drives turnout. If Mitt Romney and Barack Obama were not on the ballot, then there's no doubt that the turnout would be much lower for these other races. And in Louisiana, it appears that Governor Romney is in relatively good shape. But remember, in the city of Baton Rouge, in the last election, it went narrowly for President Obama, despite the fact that the president received fewer than 40% of the votes statewide. So Baton Rouge may be a bit different because primarily we have a large urban center, and we also have college types, educators who may be a bit more moderate to liberal than the general public in Louisiana. 297-5633 if you'd like to join the conversation, and I'm reading some email inquiries. You may reach us online at inkstershow@wrkf.org. And a question from Richard wants to know if George McGovern would be successful if he ran for president today. And I'm not sure that he was successful when he ran for president in 1972. It was kind of a fluke that he got the nomination, which is a success story. But remember, he only carried one state against Richard Nixon. And I'm not sure a guy as openly liberal, who actually called himself a liberal, as George McGovern did, would have any shot at all of winning the presidential election today. And that's why these candidates tend to move to the center. But back in McGovern's day, if someone were a liberal, that basically had as much of a positive or negative connotation as saying you were conservative. But today you have candidates who don't shy away from being tagged as a conservative, but rarely do you have a national candidate or even a local one who will say, "I'm a liberal." They'll say something like, "I'm a progressive." And so the verbiage has changed, and perhaps the issues have too. And for somebody to be as openly left on so many issues as Senator McGovern was, it would seem, Richard, that it would be unlikely that Senator McGovern would be a success story in 2012 to equal what he did in 1972. In looking at the footage from that convention in Miami, Florida, 40 years ago, it's interesting to see that when McGovern gave his speech, there were many people in dress that is not usually seen at conventions, and it was unfair, but it was a fact that McGovern's base was considered to be a bit left of the American public, and a lot of young people. Gary Hart was his campaign manager in 1972, and Gary Hart then was a young man in his early 30s. He's 75 years old now, but he would have been 35 40 years ago, and he was one of the older ones in the McGovern troop. Bill Clinton was only 26. So all these young people gathered around Senator McGovern. Many of them are still alive, and perhaps that's why there's this passion for him now that he has passed after a life that began in 1922. But as we look at Louisiana come November 6th, the question is whether Mitt Romney will get as many votes as John McCain did in 2008. Elliot Stonecipher, last week at the Baton Rouge Press Club, said that he thought that Governor Romney would get 60% and President Obama would get 40%. Bernie Pinsenat, the well-known pollster who operates in this area, said it would be about 55% for Mitt Romney, at least. So that's the bottom number for Bernie, whose poll showed the race closer than many think it will be. They were only 6 points apart, Governor Romney over President Obama, in the survey that was conducted by Southern Media and Opinion Research, with Bernie Pinsenat as the person who is the foremost pollster in this area, along with his partner Buster McKenzie. Do note that a listener says there's a congressional race on the ballot. There are congressional races on the ballot everywhere in Louisiana. And in this area, Bill Cassidy will be up for re-election. He faces two lesser-known candidates. The Libertarian Rufus Craig Jr., a lawyer in this area, is running against Congressman Cassidy, as is Richard Torregano, and they both have been featured on this program. And Bill Cassidy will be with us Friday. Congressman Cassidy, who has not shied from making public appearances, despite having a war chest that is probably close to $2 million, and his candidates are spending much less. Torregano says he's raised no money, and Rufus Craig on this program said he had only raised $4,000. But Congressman Cassidy, to his credit, is making the usual rounds in his quest for a third term. Phil in Jefferson Terrace, good morning to you, Phil.
Good morning, Jim. I was just calling in to think about some third-party candidates. I know when Mike Gravel ran as a Democrat, he just, he was pretty much open to say, you know, what he honestly thought of, like, some of the U.S. policies. I mean, he was really an interesting person to have in that race, and I know Buddy Romer made just a pretty good run of, you know, getting his ideas out there. So, Howard Dean was pretty instrumental in the way he got the fundraising thing going. I don't think Obama would have been elected without, using the Howard Dean blueprint of having small donors send in their money to his campaign. So I know we have the two-party system, and it's kind of an affliction in a way because there's not very much wiggle room, you know, when it comes down to what the president is able to do or just what the majority of the country would like, you know, to be done.
Well, the third-party candidacy of Ralph Nader in 2000 likely cost Albert Gore the election. He got almost 3 million votes, and he got enough in Florida to keep Gore from winning that state. And as a result, President Bush, despite losing the popular vote, ended up winning the election. So third-party candidates can make a difference. Gary Johnson is the Libertarian candidate this time, former governor of New Mexico. He will be a strong candidate, but he has been largely ignored and, of course, did not participate in the debates with Governor Romney and President Obama. Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, has been endorsed by several people, including Ralph Nader, prominent people. But you'd have to think, Phil, that barring something really unexpected, that the third-party candidates this time around will have a minimal impact on the final tally between President Obama and Governor Romney.
Yep, that's true. But I do think that there were people that were much more qualified to be in the Republican primary than, whether they had 8 or 9. And, I think there were other people that were much more qualified or had better things to say.
Phil, we thank you. 297-5633 is your number. We'll take a one-minute pause and return on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 877-217-5757 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. Inside the area, it's 297-5633, or you may reach us at inkstershow@wrkf.org. And we're sorry that Roger Villery couldn't make it today, but hopefully we'll visit with him again soon. He's a good guy, and I assume something more pressing was on his table today, so maybe at the florist. 297-5633 in our remaining moments, and Kimberly Chopin with her debut novel, Metamorphosis, a Love Story, will join us in just a moment. But we will follow the election as it gets closer, and we're getting real close, 2 weeks from tomorrow. And tonight, the final presidential debate will take place. Foreign policy will be the topic. Bob Schieffer of CBS will be the moderator. And if it's anything like debate number two, it should be feisty between the president and Governor Romney. Now, a listener reminds us that part of Baton Rouge is in 2nd Congressional District, and that is correct. That's the district represented by Cedric Richmond of New Orleans, and it's a largely minority district, and it stretches all the way to Baton Rouge. And because of the voters that were taken out of Congressman Cassidy's district, his district, which once approached 30% in African-American representation, is now closer to 20%, and it makes it more fertile for a Republican to win. And Congressman Cassidy has stated that he is looking at the U.S. Senate race in 2014 against Senator Landrieu, and if he makes that decision to run for the U.S. Senate, there will be a number of Republicans looking at his seat in Congress, and the question will be how many Democrats, if any, will run for the 6th District, with the district lines changing so much and now being more friendly for a Republican candidate. And Don Cashew, as we remember, held that seat for a few months after Richard Baker resigned abruptly to become head of the National Hedge Fund Association. But Congressman Cashew, a Democrat, was only able to hold it for about 6 months before Congressman Cassidy, running in 2008, was aided by Michael Jackson running as a third-party candidate in that election. The votes that Jackson received and Cashew received far exceeded the number of votes that Congressman Cassidy received, but Congressman Cassidy ran first, and that enabled him to win the election. 297-5633 is your number, and we switch gears for a bit, and we're joined in studio by Kimberly Chopin. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning, Jim.
Well, for those who are familiar with you, you work at the Louisiana Lottery as communications manager.
That's right.
And you're wearing a new hat now as a novelist.
Absolutely.
And very, very proud of your work, as you should be. And how do you blend the two between writing and doing what you do as a big player with the lottery?
Well, I think creatively, it's quite easy to blend. I mean, good writing is good writing. I did this novel more for me. You know, I've all of my career, I've written for other people. Given a job, given an assignment, what are the objectives, what am I trying to achieve? But this was an opportunity really for me to write from my heart and things that were inside of me. So it was a true way of self-expression.
Well, you do it well, but it's a different kind of writing.
Absolutely,
this is not
it sure
a press,
is.
It's not a press release we're talking about.
Yes, but at the same time, there are some similarities. You definitely have to know your audience. You have to be able to hook them, give them something that's going to make them think, intrigue them, and keep them wanting to read.
Well, the book is Metamorphosis, a Love Story, but there's a lot of drama in the love story, isn't there?
That's right. I think it offers a little bit of everything. It does have that love triangle in the story. It also has a lot of information about the choices that we make in our lives and how they impact others and our future. And I think it's a story about different kinds of love, not just about physical love, but also about how our spirituality impacts our physical presence, and I think, and self-love as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, after her mysterious abduction while visiting a prison pen pal, 18-year-old Celie Jantz is dumped unconscious on the shores of her quaint beach town 3 days later. She awakes to find her childhood innocence has been pilfered, her mother is dead, her father is psychotic, and she suddenly has a strong romantic interest in her high school best friend, Gabe Gibson. She's not even sure it's her life she's living anymore. There's a whole lot going on there.
There you go. Indeed.
So how are you able to weave all these plot lines together?
Well, first of all, just as any writer does, you have to have an idea of where you're going to end the story. And then who are the lead characters and what is their purpose within the story? And I think a lot of this is set up because my main character, Celie, is very vulnerable at the beginning. And that is, she's not only vulnerable from the standpoint of feeling very alone. Mm-hmm. Something has also happened to her. And the third character in the story comes in and helps explain that mysteriousness as to why she doesn't feel like herself.
Well, a handsome man comes into the picture. Who's this guy?
This is Kadum. Kadum is actually, and you find out later in the story, he is from another planet who has come in to take over the body of someone else, and it's a situation of mistaken identities. But slowly, he learns a lot from Celie, and that's really where his mission on Earth and her finding her self-identity come together to help solve the story.
And you're tying a whole bunch of things together. Metamorphosis explores the tenuous but undeniable connection between our body and our spirit.
Yes, it does. There's several places in the story where we can see one impacting the other.
Yeah, and the character, Celie, 18 years old, is she a combination of other people you've known, or is this is this one person? Is it you?
Well, that's really interesting that you asked that, because I did use a lot of friends and family and people that I know to inspire these characters, but I write, the story is told basically in chronological order, but with each character having the voice told in first person. And that was an interesting exercise for me, because I found that there were, in each character, there is a lot of me in each one of them. Mm-hmm. So that as I was writing from that character's vantage point, I found it easy to call upon those parts of me that were more their main focus in their character. So that was exciting and a fun exercise.
Well, this didn't happen by osmosis. So you obviously put a lot of work into your book. I suspect this took a while to get together.
It did. I had the idea for this story when I was in fourth grade.
Wow.
I know, but you just don't have the life experiences to be able to write a book, although I have to say I really did try when I was that age to put some of these thoughts together. And I love to read. I really do. And so one day I told myself, you know, I love to read, but why don't I just try to write this story? And there were some things that helped develop that story along the way in my college life that I feel like contributed to the main plot of the story. But it did. It took a lot of time. And having a full-time job and three children meant there were a lot of late nights and early mornings where I would get on the computer to type. And you're right. There, you know, I found the pull to it. What's really interesting is that Celie is an artist in the book. And I spent a lot of time researching artists, learning about their lives. And it was interesting because there were a few that I ran into that told of their lives being constantly, that's all they wanted to do. Forgo food, forgo sleep, all I want to do is paint. And their friends would be concerned about them. But, you know, I found myself being pulled back in that same direction, where in the middle of the night, some dialogue would come to me. Mm-hmm. And I just could not wait to get up and just write that stuff down. It was like this pulled me more than eating, sleeping, anything else. And, you know, God bless my family, and especially my husband, who spent a lot of time cooking, doing homework with kids, not having clothes folded or put away, to allow me to really be able to focus on this during my off time.
Well, the book is Metamorphosis, a Love Story from Kimberly Young Chopin. And you dedicated it to your sister.
I did. She is very much like me in so many different ways, but she often completes me in the sense that some of the weaknesses I have are strengths that she has, and vice versa. So she's very special to me, although we fought like cats and dogs growing up. She inspired me to, throughout this whole venture of writing, she prodded me, encouraged me, got excited when I would share with her parts of the plot, and couldn't wait to read the next chapter when I'd start coming up with writing samples. So I just felt it was appropriate that she be recognized.
Well, you did it in a nice way. Metamorphosis, a Love Story from Kimberly Young Chopin. You'll be at the book festival?
I will be at the book festival this Saturday.
And this Saturday, for those who are, and we'll talk more about it this week, there'll be a whole fat gang of writers gathered downtown.
That's right. I think it's wonderful that Louisiana provides this opportunity for up-and-coming authors to really celebrate their creativity and their work. So I'm very pleased to be a part of it.
Well, you should be. And Kimberly Chopin has started out with a grand book, and the weaving together of big topics is remarkable as she shows how adept she is with her pen. And I would imagine there are more books coming from you.
My sister is begging for me to do a sequel, and I have the book on Amazon as well, and I've had a few more people call out. So when I have time to devote, I will definitely be working on the sequel.
And for those who would like to know more about Metamorphosis, a Love Story, how do they find out? How do they get one of your books?
You can come to the book festival this weekend. You can jot me an email, or you can visit me on Amazon.
All right, Amazon.com. Now, do you know where you're going to be located at the book festival?
I'm actually going to be on the Capitol sidewalk on one of the tables. I believe I'm table number 11. But they have food and music and tents and author book signings and something for all ages. So just holding out for great weather, it should be wonderful.
Well, congratulations on a spectacular debut novel.
Thank you so much, Jim.
Thank you, Kimberly. Take care. 297-5633 as we round out the hour and respond to a few emails over the course of the hour. Nicholas on Nicholson writes, at this day and age, can we justify having an electoral vote as opposed to popular vote? And I would think that it would be better to have a popular vote. Certainly Louisiana and Baton Rouge would have received more attention from the candidates if a popular vote were in place rather than the electoral vote that is divided as it is, with all the 8 electoral votes now that Louisiana has going to one candidate and polls showing Governor Romney far ahead. So because of that, the only time that President Obama and Governor Romney come into this state and others, including California for that matter, and New York, is when they're raising money. They're really not campaigning here other than through national commercials that we see on a regular basis. So I think the only way that this will ever happen, though, is for the Republicans to have the same fate that Democrats had in 2000. And that would be that, let's say, Governor Romney wins the popular vote and President Obama wins in the Electoral College. Then there might be a movement to change matters because both parties would have been affected in a profound way by the current system. And the last time that this had happened, and it's happened before in American history, was in 1876. So nobody was alive when it happened before 2000. But it did happen to Al Gore, and that changed not only that election, but of course changed the direction of the country over the next several years. So we may have a move for a popular vote if something happens that affects Republicans the same way the 2000 election affected Democrats. Now, Nate Silver, up until yesterday, he moved Obama to 288 in the Electoral College. He had a 287 to 251 with Obama narrowly leading in Ohio. Now, if Ohio, with 18 electoral votes, went the other way and it was 287-251, then that makes both candidates come in at 269, one short of winning the election, which would mean the election would go to the U.S. House of Representatives, which is right now controlled by Republicans. So presumably President Obama would be replaced by President Romney. And if that happened, I think we might have a big change in the way we elect American presidents. But it's going to be tough to change unless something happens again that is similar to what occurred in 2000. And as remote as that might seem, remember in 2004, John Kerry almost won Ohio. And if he had, he would have been the president. And President Bush that year won the popular vote over Senator Kerry by 3 million votes. Imagine losing an election after winning the popular vote by 3 million votes, and it almost happened to George Walker Bush in 2004. But the next 2 weeks should determine a close election. There are some who are saying that it's going to break one way or the other, and we'll have a repeat of Ronald Reagan in 1980, when the election was considered to be a toss-up a week out, and then Reagan carried 44 states against Jimmy Carter. But that would seem to be highly, highly doubtful. All but about 7 or 8 states are supposedly determined as to who the winner will be, and the remainder of the action in the next couple of weeks, the last 15 days, will largely be centered on the so-called swing states, with much of the attention going to Ohio. Florida is getting a lot, as you can imagine. It was the state that ultimately determined who won in 2000, but Ohio is getting the most. And not only Ohio, but certain centers of Ohio are being focused on like a laser beam by President Obama and Governor Romney. And tonight, we'll see what happens in debate number 3. And we, of course, will talk about it tomorrow on this program. For Kevin Gallagher, I'm Jim Inkster. We thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Inkster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Inkster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.